What's up, everybody? Welcome to the final Rummy and Ray Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host, Raymond Summerlin. I'm joined one more time by the best in the business, Mr. Rumford. Johnny, what's up, Johnny?
That's right. It's the last podcast. I just cannot work with you anymore. Just so people know, true story, reality, Ray and I had planned to do this for one season. You know, it was something that we wanted to try to do a DFS podcast. I'm really proud of what we did. I thought it was unique. I thought the style that we did it in was unique to the community. And it got our feet wet, you know, talking about DFS in podcast form. And again, I think we've helped some people that are sort of on our level in terms of DFS, and maybe some people that are just below us for getting started. And I think we reached a lot of people, and I'm really proud of that. And, you know, again, we'll talk a little bit more about that stuff later on, but I'm really, really happy with what we did this year. And we learned a lot of different lessons in terms of DFS, I think.
Yeah, I think that, you know, going through this year, the best way to kind of learn from your mistakes, and I mean, I talked about it last week, really my biggest lesson is you kind of get lost in how many games there are, especially when there aren't any bye weeks, these last kind of 5-6 weeks, and you get lost in just how many games and how many people you're trying to look at that you lose track of just the simple things you do. I think I got worse at cash games, at least as the year went on, because you just get so lost in everything. You forget the simple kind of things that you should have been doing all along. And so that's really my lesson, is just, remember the fundamentals. Remember, you know, the basic things that you're looking for in cash games. I want a running back who is involved in the passing game and who is a favorite at home, if at all possible. You know, just simple things like that, where you don't get lost in what you're doing. And I think that's one of my biggest lessons of this season, is just to, you know, make sure that you're really sticking tight to your fundamentals the whole year and don't get kind of lost in what you're doing.
No, I agree, and I'm with you. I think I really struggled too, you know, the last several weeks. I had some up and down weeks. I broke even some weeks. Some weeks I, you know, my losing weeks were essentially the latter part of the season. I mean, I actually did okay last week, but I had some rough weeks. You know, some up and down weeks. But you're right. I think that's when we sort of forget, when things start rolling back out again, and we sort of have a bigger, you know, it's like, it's the old candy store mentality. We have more things to choose from, and we lose sight of that, those obvious precepts that we take with us every week. And some of the things, you know, that I learned, I took away this week, and I know, this season, and I think you and I both kind of differ somewhat in our approaches, but I think we both have some similar values, is that, you know, sometimes the obvious plays are there, especially in cash games, don't always add up. I mean, a great example last week, you know, was Pittsburgh. I think a lot of sharp people were on Pittsburgh last week, and it just didn't add up. I mean, it was just one of those things where, you know, we looked at a, you know, road situation, and the Steelers, you know, we thought in a perfect matchup because, you know, Baltimore had been really generous to quarterbacks in passing games, and just didn't work out that way. But it goes back to our original precept about talking about teams on the road, and particularly with Pittsburgh, they struggle on the road. At least Ben Roethlisberger struggled on the road. The passing game has really kind of been diminished somewhat on the road this year. So while it was a perfect matchup, and while it seemed like a perfect storm, there were some underlying themes that we should have paid attention to, and we missed on those things. And that's kind of what it is. It's about paying attention to the details and sticking to our original game plan. And I think some of those things get missed. But again, the process wasn't bad. And I think a lot of people were on the Steelers last week, and that bit them in the butt eventually. And, you know, a lot of great plays that we would have thought were great that weren't optimum last week as well. So, and that happens week to week. I mean, it just, situations occur, great passing, you know, offenses necessarily on the road in situations where, you know, they don't have to necessarily throw and they just run the football. Those things occur. And that changes, you know, essentially the outcome. Not the process might have been perfect or might have been smart and forward thinking, but the outcomes aren't always optimum. And that's one of those things we just have to learn to accept. I mean, the more we think with our process and that it's correct, ultimately over 16 weeks of the season, you're going to make money. And you're going to have some down weeks, but ultimately throughout that season, you're going to cash. And you really can't get hung up on those down weeks because sometimes it just don't work out.
Yeah, I think that, you know, making sure, I guess that's another lesson of the season. Not one that I broke, but it's just one. I played poker a bit when I was in college, and so I learned this lesson the hard way. But you never bet on tilt. You never, after a bad week, after a week like I had 2 weeks ago in which I was just dreadful, had a dreadful week. You never go out the next week and then say, all right, I'm going to bet the whole bankroll. Or it's week 17 this week and I want to make sure I maximize because I don't play baseball DFS and I play very little NBA DFS. And so if I'm, although I plan to get into it a little more this year, but if I'm once the NFL season's over, once the two playoff slates that we'll have are finished, then that's it for me. And so for the most part, so, you know, there's a lot of kind of, oh, well, I'm going to go play 50% of my bankroll this week, but that's not smart. That's not the way to do it. That's not the way to go about it. So, but it goes back to my basic principle. And in some ways I've stuck to it. In other ways I've fallen away from it somewhat. You have to stick to your principles and you have to stick to your process, as you said. And if you do that, then more often than not, and if you're making, you know, good sound decisions, then more often than not, it's going to work out. And I think that's my biggest takeaway and something that I'm going to make sure I remember come next NFL season.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we've also sort of looked at the DFS landscape a lot, like we've looked at sort of the season long landscape in similar fashion, that we don't pay up for quarterbacks because there's so much value. And I think that most weeks we don't have to do that. We can find value sort of in those singular positions. I think tight end was really volatile this year. I think there were just a handful of tight ends that really helped us week to week, and that we didn't really have to get really too cute at the position, because I think there were just really just a small faction of tight ends that really were viable week to week to week. Jordan Reed. And I think that, you know, other than that, I mean, it's you know, we always have to remember the difference between our cash lineups and our GPP lineups, because, you know, obviously cash is about, you know, removing as much volatility as possible from our thinking and trying to cement a very safe lineup, a secure lineup. And, you know, it's sort of like our cash lineups are, you know, the 401ks, if you will, you know, week to week. You know, it's the safe money, you know, it's that safe, low ceiling money. We know that we're going to be able to cash if we stay within that framework. And then, you know, it's sort of like the GPPs are like playing the stock market. It's a little bit more volatile. We don't know what we're going to – it's the wild, wild west. We don't really know what we're going to get. But we have to think, you know, in that framework where, you know, you have to make those leaps of faith. You have to kind of get creative and look where nobody else is looking, uncover the rocks and, you know, and look for those things that other people aren't looking at. And that's what it comes down to. And those are basic principles. And, you know, every year we get better at this, you know, every week we get better at this. And ultimately, you know, we're going to be productive. We're going to make money from this. And I think that's, you know, the whole premise of DFS is not getting stuck on certain things and trying to improve and get better. And then once you get really good, then you're making money and you're going to be in that higher percentile every week.
I agree. All right, so let's get to this week, the final week. of the NFL season. As always, we'll hit the top five totals. We'll talk some stacks. We'll hit some contrarian plays. And it's kind of an interesting slate this week. It's all divisional games, which means it's all rematches. So that's kind of tricky. Rematches tend to be a little odd.
Yep.
We have some huge moves that are happening. One game that we're not even going to talk about because of how far the total has dropped, but that's Green Bay and Minnesota, Minnesota at Green Bay, which will be the Sunday night game. And that total, I saw it at 48. I bet under on it at 48, and it's dropped all the way to 45.5. So there has been a huge move on that game. I'm glad I got the under. If it keeps dropping, I might end up betting the over at some point and seeing if I can't find myself a little middle. But so that was a huge move, and there've been some other kind of interesting moves that have been happening, a bit that we'll talk about. So it's just one of those really weird and odd weeks that, you know, might play havoc on our DFS lineup. So something to think about. Our first game we have is New Orleans at Atlanta. Atlanta's 4-point home favorites. The total is 53. It's climbing. It's climbed by 1.5 already. The over is getting pounded. Almost a lot of the action's on the over, and the total keeps climbing. It's almost even action on the side. So New Orleans and Atlanta getting almost even action. Our first team here is Atlanta at home. Matt Ryan, $7,600. I think he's probably the most interesting player in this game. You know, on one side you have New Orleans, the worst pass defense, or Jacksonville's giving them a run for their money at this point. So maybe the second worst pass defense, but certainly terrible. And you're looking at Matt Ryan, though, who doesn't have a 20-point game since week 11. Mm. He's never really hit his tournament value at his current price. His price is a little bit up. He's, you know, played better the last 2 weeks. He still hasn't really hit that big game. So it's an interesting situation here for Ryan, who might be higher on than maybe he should be. Are you a little interested in him this week, or are you still fading him?
Definitely fading him in cash. I mean,
oh, absolutely. Yeah.
It'd be a nightmare scenario in cash. I think, you know, like you said, I mean, obviously it's the narrative street. I mean, New Orleans is, you know, it's going to pump up ownership for any quarterback, really, any quarterback. We've seen that throughout the season. That defense is literally the worst at covering running backs, wide receivers, and tight ends. They're this terrible. I mean, and I'm not, you know, looking at the numbers straight away. I mean, this overall, they're just bad at everything.
No, you're right. They are the 32nd ranked, according to DVOA of Football Outsiders. They're the 32nd ranked team against running backs out of the backfield, and they are the 32nd ranked team against tight ends as well. They're terrible.
Yeah, I mean, they're just bad. And you know, nothing changed. Firing Rob Ryan didn't change anything. They're just still bad. You know, so it sets up nicely, but I think that narrative street just pushes up value and, you know, ownership, I should say. And somebody like, you know, Matt Ryan, we've seen just doesn't have a high ceiling. And that's probably in part and parcel because it's a one-man show. It's Julio, really. Nobody else is really doing much outside of just sort of being, you know, just sort of those peripheral guys like Roddy White and Tammy. I mean, just adding little bits and pieces.
50 but not, and 30 yards every week.
Yeah, I mean, they're not doing much. And Freeman is really just sort of that intermediate vacuum right now in the passing game. And he has standalone value. We like Freeman, obviously, this week. And we like Julio. Julio certainly will be targeted heavily. It's just that you don't have to stack with Matt Ryan, because his ceiling isn't that high, but you still want a piece of this pie against New Orleans. So obviously the pie is attacked via Julio and Devonta Freeman in some way or form. You could stack the two together. I mean, that's really one of those unusual stacks that you can say, well, I'm going to stack two players, a wide receiver and a running back, which we don't normally like to do, and then grab a quarterback from another team, you know, an unstacked quarterback, because I feel more comfortable saying maybe playing somebody like Cam and then playing them with him with Freeman and Julio, because I just don't think that Matt Ryan's ceiling is all that big. I think he is somebody that's going to feed his number one target and check down to his running back, and that's what he's going to do. And that volume just isn't there. Like, he doesn't have that colossal ceiling. Quarterbacks like Bortles. I mean, that Kirk Cousins or, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick that have much higher ceilings than he does. And even in a matchup like that, you just can't count on him. I think in a cheap GPP, I might throw out a stack. But, you know, other than that, like, if I was in the millionaire maker, I wouldn't even bother. I mean, I would use an unstacked, you know, lineup if I was going to play both of those players.
Yeah, I mean, I think that at some point, I learned the lesson with Kirk Cousins. At some point, New Orleans is so bad that even players who hadn't shown upside, and I mean, Matt Ryan's definitely not a player that's never shown upside. I mean, we're talking a couple of years ago, last year, he was a pretty good back-end quarterback one in redraft leagues. And so it's not like he's been absolutely terrible. He threw for 295 yards and two touchdowns against New Orleans last time in New
Orleans.
Which
is okay. Yeah, which is like really, on average, what everybody else has done is okay. It's not horrible, but it's not, you know, it's like that's his ceiling, it seems like.
I think that like 302, hoping for 303, that's what you're looking at. And at 7,600, that's not great. But there is that non-zero chance that he just goes out and throws five touchdowns because New Orleans is that bad and Julio's losing his mind right now. But I think you're right that the plays here are Julio, who, I mean, just absolutely can destroy anybody. He's playing at home. He has, you know, he's 9,300 on FanDuel, but he has a ton of upside. And I think you definitely have to play him. And like you said, Devontae Freeman, who had a 8 for 56 and a touchdown receiving line last time against New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
New Orleans is terrible against the run too. He's guaranteed touches regardless of game flow, which is what you love to have in your cash running backs. I mean, I think Devontae Freeman is a great play. He's really highly priced at 8,800, but he's basically hit that cash value, you know, almost every week that he's been healthy. So I love both those guys. I think I agree with you on Matt Ryan. I will have a tournament lineup with him in maybe a $1 or $2 just because I think you have to. But it's, you know, it is a tricky one. And on the other side, Drew Brees is also a bit tricky because he has been quite a bit worse on the road this season. He hasn't.
Mm-hmm.
He has not gone over 21 points in any road game yet this year. He has 3 under 15 points. So he's been struggling in that regard. But if you look at his last four games, he's been over 20 points in all those games. He has 3 touchdowns in 3 of those games. He has 300 yards in the last 3. So he's kind of almost had a tale of two seasons. And now on the back end here, he's $8,400. He's going up against a good defense. They're indoors. It's one of those situations where, like Ryan, I see some reasons why he's not going to have a big game, and I see some reasons why I would never use him in cash. But at some point, this game has such a high total that you kind of just want to have him in a $2, $5 tournament just to make sure that you have some exposure to him.
Absolutely. And listen, we like to talk about correlation plays. Now, correlation plays in the sense that any matchup that has a high over-under, you want to have little pieces of both pies. Now, here's your correlation play, because maybe Breeze doesn't have the highest ceiling that we think, but in a GPP, maybe he does. I mean, in that sense that maybe you go Julio and Freeman and you add in Drew Breeze in that mix, because maybe you don't like his targets individually, like any one to go off, because maybe we feel a little ambiguous about Snead, Cooks, and Watson, you know, all having big games. But maybe we think one or two has a big game, or maybe one has a huge game. We just don't know who it is. It's probably not a bad idea to have one of those, like we just talked about, $1, $2 GPPs, where you have Breeze, Julio, and Freeman, or some you know, arrangement in that sense. So you're getting a piece of both pies. So I'm doing a GPP lineup with those three in mind, you know, and having that really unique sort of correlation stack.
I do, you know, and I agree with that in principle, but I do think there are some pieces of this passing game that I could be interested in.
Yep.
One of them is Ben Watson, but that's going to obviously depend on his health. He wasn't healthy last week. He was only targeted twice. It was his first time with less than 8 targets since week 10. So he was not healthy. He was not as involved in the passing game as he had been, but the reason that Ben Watson it was a fantasy consideration at all this year all started with Atlanta in week six when he went for 10, 127 yards and a touchdown. So we're looking at a guy that we know can attack this defense, and this defense has been okay against tight ends. I mean, DVOA, they're eighth against tight ends, which is crazy to me, but we've seen them get attacked by tight ends successfully this year. And obviously Ben Watson was the one who did it first. So he's a guy that could be interesting, especially if you know, we find out he's healthy. He could be a little lower owned. It's really hard on Brandon Cooks simply because Desmond Trufant has started to shadow people. He shadowed last week. He shadowed 2 weeks ago against Allen Robinson. Cooks was pretty much a good play last time against them. He was a bad play last time against them, 4 for 41. But he's a really bad play if Desmond Trufant's falling, and we shut down again last week. So it's kind of one of those situations where Cooks has been really good. You've liked him the last four games, but if Trufant's following him, I don't know what you do with him. And to your other point with Willie Snead, I mean, Willie Snead's been fine. He's getting 75 yards a game the last three games, but where's that upside? Is he's never really shown that upside. So it's kind of a tough situation. I think you're right. It's a tough situation for Breeze. I think that I'm okay matching him with Watson, but outside of that, that's a real tournament concern. Who am I matching him with if Watson's not healthy?
Right. That's why, like I say, I mean, in the tournament, there are times in tournaments you don't necessarily have to stack, and you stack elsewhere, you know, within your lineups. If you like a piece of an offense, you can certainly go with a wide receiver, a running back, tight end, in some combination, and go with a solo or naked quarterback, and that's possible in that situation. So, or you know, completely go off the map from that line, that matchup. And like I said earlier, somebody like Cam or even Fitzpatrick, somebody that you really like individually, and don't necessarily have to touch the quarterback in that matchup either. So, yeah, I think it's probably going to be a little ambiguous, but I do think that away from home, I think they'll be in a little bit in catch-up mode. They're terrible on defense. I think this is a game where Atlanta really kind of runs the table a little bit. They're a little high off their last win, too. And I think that this defense actually has some upside as well for Atlanta at home. They're finally getting some really good pass rush play, and I think that's something that helps out. Because, I mean, Drew Brees is that offensive line has been vulnerable. They can certainly get after the quarterback. He's a little gimpy, too. Remember, he's playing on that basically torn foot, really. And I think that you can certainly get after him. He's not going to be running around as much. So I do like the Atlanta defense. They're relatively cheap, too, on DraftKings. I think they're sort of moderately priced this week.
A way that you might be able to get Breeze in the lineup and then, you know, match someone from this game could be in the running game, because Atlanta is so vulnerable against pass-catching running backs. They've given up the most receptions to running back this year, and it's a huge margin. I think they're like 13 ahead of the second-place team. So they give up a ton to running backs. You know, that would push you towards maybe Travaris Cadet in PPR, full PPR sites, but you know, he's not going to get any carries. With CJ Spiller on IR, obviously, so Travaris Cadet would be the guy. I think that Tim Hightower has a little bit of appeal here simply because he does still get involved a little bit in the passing game. He ran 13 routes last week to 18 for Cadet, so it wasn't like he was completely out of the passing game. He has three catches in each of his last two. He's hit cash and basically two of his three games that he's played, cash value at $7,000, which is what his salary is. So I, you know, road favorite makes him a little hard to trust in cash, but I mean, we've seen some upside from him. He's played a lot better than I certainly thought he was going to play. So I think Hightower's a little interesting. And if you want to do a Breeze with Hightower, I don't think that's a terrible idea. So it's maybe a way to get in there.
Yep.
All right. So the next game we have is the Philadelphia Eagles. They've kind of been in the news recently. Did you hear about that?
No, I've been off, social media. So what happened?
Apparently they fired a coach or something. Oh. I don't know. Must have been like an offensive line coach or something.
Was it the Smoothie King?
Yeah, it was the Smoothie King. So the Eagles, the Chip Kelly-less Eagles, going to New York to face the Giants. No, what's interesting about this line is it hasn't really moved. The Giants are still 3.5-point home favorites. The total's still 51.5. 68% of the action is on the Giants. It is going their way a little bit. I believe it was Giants by 3 whenever the news broke. So leaving the key number of 3, getting a 3.5, that is a bit of a big move. But certainly, you know, they didn't take it off the board, which was really surprising. I think the story of this game will be, what are we going to learn about Philadelphia's offense over the next week or before Sunday? Because if they're still going to come out and run a similar offense, which I think they almost have to, I mean, Chip Kelly was fired on a Tuesday night. There's not like the game plan's in by that point. You're going to start installing on Wednesday. So right. It's not like it's a situation where I think they can change things up. Maybe they run a bit slower pace, but both of these teams are top 3 and seconds per play. So how many plays or how long between plays? So both of them are really fast between plays. Philadelphia's faced the most plays per game this year. Giants have faced the second most. This is a game that has really, really high pace opportunity. Now, obviously the firing hurts it a little bit, but I think that this could be a game that people maybe overlook a little bit. Eli was terrible last week without Odell Beckham. Odell Beckham will obviously be owned by everybody everywhere, but people aren't going to be on Philadelphia. I think there's a lot of value in this game. What do you think?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think we're both very vulnerable defenses. I think you can certainly attack them. I think that, you know, people have been up and down on Bradford. I thought he looked pretty decent last week. I thought the sort of the resurgence of J-Matt a little bit and Ertz being really more of a reliable weekly target. I mean, he was sort of up and down during the season, was banged up a little bit. I think those three together for me are decent stack and nice contrarian stack, because I think a lot of people, I think the chalk is going to be Odell Beckham. I mean, it's complete narrative street, you know, coming off the suspension, terrible secondary. He's going to eat. I mean, there's no... Yeah. You can't fight it. He's probably going to be the wide receiver one.
You should start all your cash lineups with Odell Beckham in it.
Yeah, absolutely. You're constructing – it's Odell. It's OBJ with a little R, OBJ, Odell Beckham Jr. And you're starting with him, and then you're filling it out thereafter. And matter of fact, you might want to fill it out with Odell and then slide down to your tight end on DraftKings, by the way. 3,600 is Zach Ertz, who's just
– Why?
I don't know, but cash money. So – start with those two.
Are you kidding me?
No. Start with those two. That's a nice correlation play, as we like to talk about, Ray. Start out with those two. And if you want to, you know, pivot that to a GPP lineup, then you can certainly use Bradford, or you can use Eli if you'd like, either one, or use both if you're constructing some GPP lineups. Because I think that correlation is really nice. I think both teams will score a lot of points. But I think it's about the passing game. I think it's about the usual suspects. I do think that Rashad Jennings has some decent value on the Giants side. I think he's sort of separated himself a little bit as the lead running back. And I think he's probably going to be pretty busy in this game. So I do like him a little bit. I'm not as excited about the rest of the passing game. But I will say this. It's alive again. It's the Frankenstein's monster is back. It's back. It's alive. You know, it's the electricity's back in the lineup with Odell Beckham, because we saw this offense without him. You know, he's the straw that stirs the drink, and with him back in the lineup, everybody else works. So you can get some value, obviously potentially big value from Eli. Everybody else comes back into play, so you can certainly plug in Will Tye again as a red zone threat. So, I mean, I love both. I love this game. I want pieces of this pie.
Hold on a second. I'm calling my bank so I can get a second mortgage, so I can create nothing but Zach Ertz lineups. At DraftKings. Exactly. How is he only 30? How?
Well, here's the thing about, I will say this about DraftKings.
He has 30 targets in the last two games.
This is no indictment on DraftKings, because listen, for a better part of the season, they were super soft on salaries, and that's kind of what they're known for. And I know it's tighter on FanDuel, and that's fine. I prefer the PPR format, because I mean I play both, but I tend to put most of my money on PPR formats and other you know platforms as well. But somebody like Ertz is just gonna eat up targets. I mean, at that price, I think they've been so top heavy with the tight ends who, you know, are like Gronk and Reed and Olsen, that the rest of the tight ends sort of get overlooked. And it's a trickle down effect. They, you know, they just kind of get lost in the shuffle. And tight ends tend to be valued after that top tier, maybe second tier. They tend to drop down to almost to like the under 4,000, and you can get some extreme value. And somebody like Ertz, to me, just, I mean, if you don't have him in cash, I mean, what's wrong with you? I mean, you can, and this is a week too, Ray. We'll get to that later. It's a week where there's so many good matchups for the top chalky wide receivers that you can build really strong cash lineups. When you put somebody like Ertz in your lineup, it gives you that flexibility, that room to be able to build a really super strong cash lineup. So why wouldn't you do that? You know, and GPPs too. I mean, again, we talked about the correlation plays here for Philadelphia at New York. You know, I want shares of him in GPPs as well too. So why not?
Yeah, that's stunning to me. So I think you hit all the guys. I like Eli. I think Eli is even a cash consideration at only 7,500 on FanDuel. I like Odell Beckham. I love Odell.
I will say this though, just so people know, I'm not against a stack in cash, but I generally don't do that. And meaning a quarterback wide receiver stack. So if I'm gonna pick one, it's Odell. I mean, I'll take him over Eli every time. So
no, I agree with that completely. But I do think Eli has some cash consideration. Yeah, sure. I'm not against playing both of them in the same lineup.
And yeah, and we'll touch on that later too. Again, because there are wide receivers that if you wanted to pivot off of, and I don't know why you would want to pivot off of Odell this week, but there are other wide receivers that we really like. You know, we talked about Julio. There's just other plays this week that are really, really have such high ceilings. So I understand that as well.
Yeah, and my goal in the cash lineup is to have Julio, Odell, and DeAndre Hopkins. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do that. I haven't really tried to build it yet, but that's my goal. If I can,
if you go dirt cheap at,
I'm going to play Colt McCoy.
You can go dirt cheap at right. Oh my God, dirt absolutely dirt cheap at running back. Minimum, and you can at quarterback. I mean, there's some decent minimum price quarterbacks.
Ryan Hoyer.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, our buddy Ertz, or if you wanted to go to even a little bit cheaper than him, especially on DraftKings, you could go right back to Owen Daniels, Eric Ebron. There's some other plays in there that you could certainly do that. And I love the defense plays on, especially on DraftKings. There's a lot of really good 2,400 and under defenses this week that I really like. So you could certainly do that for sure.
Yeah, in the immortal words of Angels in the Outfield, it could happen. So we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see that.
Angels in the Outfield reference. Hey! Yeah. Nice.
Yeah, that's the last movie I saw, I think. So so Ruben Randall will tie. Ruben Randall's terrible.
Yeah, he sucks.
So will tie.
He has a Davante Adams fathead on his wall.
Oh, he's so terrible. But he does have a touchdown in five of his last seven games. Just something to consider. Will tie, you know, he really disappointed last week. He has under 45 yards in the last three, despite some decent target numbers. So he's more of a touchdown or bust kind of guy. He's up to 5,200 on FanDuel. I don't really think there's a lot of value there. You mentioned Rashad Jennings. I do like Rashad Jennings a little bit this week. I mean, their run defense has been absolutely atrocious lately. They're the worst against running backs in the last five games from a fantasy perspective by far. They've given up three receiving touchdowns the last five games and eight overall. They've really been bad, and Jennings is getting the work. He has at least 14 carries in his last three games.
Yeah. He looks like he's getting a little bit of giddy up back too.
He looked
a little stale early in the season, and they're starting to use him more a little bit now. So
yeah, and I mean they've really taken Williams and Darqua out of the picture. Both of them haven't really played at all.
And they should, because they're awful.
Exactly. And so they're using him. I'm not sure I can trust him in cash. If I'm trying to fit all of those wide receivers or most of those wide receivers in. He's a guy that I might look at. There's probably a better option later on that we'll talk about. But actually, I don't think we're talking about that game, so never mind. So Jeremy Langford at 4,900 might be a better option if you're really trying to fit those wide receivers in. But I think that Jennings is interesting. And you talked about the guys on the other side. I would say about Bradford, he has back-to-back 360-yard games. This is the type of game he's going to have to throw. He has two touchdown passes in two of his last four. He's 20 points in his last two. He's only 6,700 on FanDuel.
Yep.
I think people are going to be scared to play this entire offense because of the Chip Kelly firing, and I think that's a mistake.
Yep.
I think it's going to still be high-paced, and I think Bradford is a really, really great tournament play. I'm not trusting him in cash. I think he's a great tournament play. I agree. I think the same thing about Jordan Matthews, who's found his groove lately. He has 19 targets, I believe, in the last 2 weeks. So,
he's going to win, by the way, where they're weakest.
Yeah, Trevin Wade in the slot.
Exactly. There you go.
So, yeah. So, I think that he's a great play. And then Zach Ertz, we already talked about, just blowing my mind. But here's the play. Here's the one that I'm on. You ready for it?
Mm-hmm.
DeMarco Murray.
Oh, no.
Here's why. It's all only right, obviously only tournament, right?
It's the FU Chip game.
That's what I'm thinking. So,
I like that. I you know what? I like that. I actually like that.
Total narrative street. He's only 5,900 on FanDuel, so he's not going to cost you that much. He could allow you to get some of those receivers in. The Giants aren't terrible as maybe we think they are against the run. They're not good against the run in any shape or form. They have given up the sixth most points the last 5 weeks. But if you're the guy who all the stories have said got the coach fired, then aren't you the guy that's going to get fed the ball?
And in the red zone, where he was really, really good in goal line situations to start the season, and then miraculously, for whatever reason, suddenly wasn't getting those looks in the red zone. And I think we're going to see an uptick in that. So I like that, man. I actually like that. I think that's – you should have saved that actually for contrarian plays, but I like that a lot.
I'll say it again. I mean, I can repeat
you
myself.
You can repeat it if you want to. Yeah, there you go.
So, no, I think it's a really good tournament play. I think it's a great tournament play.
Nice. Ooh. I like it. I like it a lot, actually.
So the next game we have here is Seattle at Arizona. Arizona's 6.5-point home favorites. This has climbed all the way from, I believe it opened at 4.5, closer to 4.5, so it's climbed all the way to 6.5. That's not as huge of a move between 4 and 7. It's kind of a dead zone. Those are dead numbers. So it can move pretty easily without much action in between those. But it is interesting that there's been pretty even action on both sides all week, which means probably the sharp people are hitting Arizona. And I would agree with that too in Arizona. It's less than a touchdown. I'd like Arizona as well. The totals also come down a little bit, which I think again is the right side. On the flip, so this game is kind of the opposite of the New York Giants and the Eagles game in that both of these teams have been very slow paced this year. Both are bottom seven in offensive plays per second. Seattle's faced the fewest plays. Arizona's faced the third fewest plays. So both of these teams have limited their opponents. Both of these teams have been slower paced. So when you're looking at this total of 47, I think that total is probably high. And I don't think that this is a game that's really going to have as much value as maybe people think. Not that you can't play anybody out of the game, but I think that this is a situation where we might be finding a good spot to fade Carson Palmer specifically because this might be a little lower pace than we think it will be.
Yeah, I like that take. I mean, you know, I'm kind of on the fence about whether this could be a potential back and forth type game or whether it could be just a sort of a slow meandering defensive battle. I don't know. I'm sort of in between on both, so that's kind of why I'm not heavily invested in this matchup. I'd say, if anything, I'm looking at cheaper options. I don't fear these defenses. I don't think there's. I mean, we're looking at specific matchups, obviously. So I like somebody like Baldwin a little more than Lockett in this game. I like Floyd a little bit more, you know, than somebody like Brown. I think Brown's probably going to end up drawing Sherman a little bit more. I think Sherman will be on both, but I think Sherman will mostly be on Brown for whatever reason. I picture him being on John Brown trying to take out that deep throw. So I do like Floyd, and Floyd actually had a great game last time out against them. So, but I, you know, I
as
think,
by the way, as predicted on this podcast by one Mr. Raymond Summerlin. So I'm all in on the Floyd love too. Again, I think it's a great play.
Yep. And as far as David Johnson goes, I just think he's still going to be really highly owned. And I just don't think you have to pay up. Not that he's expensive. I think he's probably more expensive on FanDuel than
he is. He's 7,700 on FanDuel, so he's really not even that expensive yet. Yeah, he's not even hit 8,000 yet.
Yeah, I mean he's still priced all right. I just think that I just don't think you have to play him this week. Especially in cash. I think there are better plays. I think there are plays that make me feel a little bit more comfortable this week. I think it's a tough matchup. And I think that, they certainly are a team that doesn't have to completely sell out, stop the run. So the way, just the way they're set up, the way they play. So I think it's a good week for him. I think he'll probably meet, his return on investment. But, I don't think you necessarily have to play him. I think you're looking at ownership, especially in GPPs. And I think he's still going to be highly owned. I think people will still chase him a little bit. And I don't think you have to. So, in cash, I think he's still pretty safe. He's cheap and you can certainly play him. And just, again, I believe, you can quote me the FanDuel where he's, where's he listed in terms of price? Is he running back? What? 5, 6, 4, 3, 2, what?
For David Johnson?
Yeah.
I actually don't have that. I don't have that off the top, but okay. I at 7,700, I would, here, I'll find it real quick. But at 7,700, I would think that he would be around running back 8.
Okay. Let's see. And I think that.
Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4. So he's running back 6. 7,700 running back 6. So he's 100 right. more than Doug Martin. So there you go.
Yeah. So Johnson's probably on DraftKings is probably in that sort of range, 6 to 8. Maybe 5, but that's still good, considering, where he's being priced. And I think that, I'd still consider him in cash. I think ownership will be high for him. I think recency bias just sort of compiles this type of thing and people will be on him. And I don't think they're going to fear the matchup because it'll be at home. And I think people are really sort of, seeing him as more of the play, if you will, than the wide receivers week to week. And I think that bodes, again, in GPPs, his ownership level is going to be a little too high for me. So I'm fine with him in cash. I'm just kind of pivoting in GPPs.
See, it's interesting. I tend to think that people react to matchups probably more than they should. And so in that case, I think that this could be a situation where they react to it. But you are right that he's at home. He's going to be basically a touchdown favorite. And so maybe people will stick with him. I'm still going to use him in cash. I mean, excuse me, not in cash. I'm going to still use him in tournaments because I, the upside has been huge with him. I think he's one of those guys. I think I'm going to ride that train until it derails. You know what I'm talking about?
Yep. Yep.
And so that's,
I mean, it's week 17. I mean, you got nothing left anyway.
So. Yeah. So I think I'll use him, but I do think that I'll fade Carson Palmer, who's been less than 18 points in 3 of his last 5, none over 23s, $8,300 on FanDuel. I think that's a little high. I do agree about Floyd. He did miss practice today, so that'll be something on Wednesday. So that'll be something to watch. But like you said, he bombed Seattle for 113 and 2 touchdowns in the last meeting. The one concern about Floyd in cash is he's not involved in the red zone. Not involved at all in the red zone. So his touchdown upside is limited. On the other side, if you get Bijan Brown, you're right. He's probably going to play a little more against Richard Sherman on the right side of the offensive formation, left side of the defensive formation. But he has 10 points in every healthy game since week 3. He's a touchdown in his last 3 as a red zone target in 6 straight. So you're looking at a guy at 6,500 who – that's a cash play and just how reliable he's been. So he's interesting. I do think you hit on a point. This could be a game of the slot receivers. Both of these defenses are very good on the outside, but if you're looking at the slot, they're not as great. So Larry Fitzgerald, who had 10 catches for 130 yards against Seattle last time, he finally found the end zone again last week. So maybe there's a little bit upside with Fitzgerald, but he's been so low upside recently. And then on the other side, Doug Baldwin, who, just does it all the time. He started this crazy run of his against Arizona when he had 7 catches for 134 yards and a touchdown. So if we're looking at Arizona as a bad matchup, people see that red Arizona next to his name, then maybe he's a little lower owned than he should be. So I think that he's definitely worth a shot. The outside receivers in Seattle, Kirst and Lockett, I'm not interested in that at all. I want no part of the running game.
Yep.
I do still want some of Russell Wilson, just because, as I say with Cam Newton every week, I think that it's DFS malpractice to not have him in your lineup. I mean, last week that offense was bad. Russell Wilson still managed 20 points.
Yep.
He has at least 22 points in 6 straight. He has at least 50 yards rushing in his last 3 meetings with Arizona. He really, really does it on the ground against them. So you're looking at a situation where he's probably going to be under pressure. He's probably going to have to escape and make those plays, but he's good at doing that. And so I still like Russell Wilson a little bit. I'm not going to use him in cash, but I still think he's a great tournament play. And so, you know, like I said, when I fade this game, I'm not going to fade it altogether. I'm definitely not using anybody from this game in cash, but I still think there's some value here that maybe you could find.
Yeah, and I agree with you on Wilson. I think people will be scared off of him because of what happened to Aaron Rodgers last week. And I think when you look at somebody like Wilson, who just escapes pressure a little bit better than Rodgers. Although Rodgers, I mean, previously he's been really a really great mobile quarterback, underrated mobile quarterback. I think he's just sort of been under fire, regardless of the matchup, really, as of late. That offensive line has really been poor. I think Wilson just somebody that has done a better job at escaping pressure. So I think if they try to funnel pressure at him in this matchup, I think he'll be able to sort of make things happen with his feet. So that's definitely a positive too, because he might potentially have one of his higher rushing games this year.
Our next game is Pittsburgh at Cleveland. This starts a run of 2 games that I'm going to be on the opposite side of the betting public on. Pittsburgh's 10.5-point road favorites. The total's 47. 64% of the action's on Pittsburgh, and it's going that way with the Johnny Manziel news. It looks like Johnny Manziel is going to miss this week with a concussion. I'm not sure if Four Loko causes concussions. I'm sure it's led to many concussions.
Yep.
There you go. The total's been almost unaffected, though, so it's gone down a little bit. But I think what's interesting, an interesting note about these 2 games, the next game we have is New England at Miami. The under has hit in 7 of the last 9 games featuring double-digit road favorites. 3 of the last 4 favorites in those games have scored 20 points or less, including New England, who we'll talk about in a bit, last season, and Pittsburgh last week in a game that I bet on Baltimore. I wish I'd have bet the money line, but I didn't. I just bet the total. And, excuse me, just bet the side. And so you have a situation here where both of these games, they're pretty high totals. They're the 4th and 5th highest totals of the week. But they're both situations in which the under tends to hit. And so maybe these aren't as great situations as they look like on paper. And that's, you know, that's something I think to consider. But I think the one thing we can agree on, even though I'm going to bet on Cleveland because I have to bet on Cleveland because that's how betting systems work, with Johnny Manziel out, we're fading the whole Cleveland offense, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm with you. I think, you know, you just mentioned both. We had a blueprint last week, you know, against Baltimore. You know, we saw that with Pittsburgh. We saw, you know, how they fared. And Roethlisberger's been pretty bad on the road. I mean, the offense as a whole has been bad. They haven't really reached value on the road this year. And
do you want some stats on that? Because I have some stats
that. Yeah, it's not great. It's not great.
So Ben Roethlisberger has 1 20-point game on the road this year. He has 3 with under 11 points. He has 2 with under 7 points, including last week. He had similar splits last season on the road. Antonio Brown has averaged 34 points in his home games since over the last 7 weeks. He's averaged 10 points in his road games. These splits are real, and they are significant over the second half of the season.
Yep. Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that's kind of why I lean toward D'Angelo Williams in this matchup.
Absolutely.
And, you know, for cash or GPPs, I think he's the safest play. You know, we know that this, like you said, the under is probably the smart play. Cleveland has been vulnerable. Williams is pretty much an insulated play. He's like David Johnson. He's a guy that's going to be involved. in the passing game. Certainly could score in this game as well. Even if it's a low scoring game, most of those points could come from Williams in this matchup. So, yeah, I mean, listen, there's some narrative street at play here, and I know that's sort of kind of mucks things up a little bit because Pittsburgh does have to win. This is a must win for them in this matchup. I mean, they have a lot at stake, but it's a road situation. It's all mapped out. It's potentially could be an implosion, end of the season for Pittsburgh, obviously. And, you know, again, all things point to Williams as the smart play. That said, in GPPs, yeah, you're going to throw out a couple of lineups and some cheap GPPs with a passing game just because it is a good matchup. There is a lot on the line for Pittsburgh. They're going to have to come out gunning in this one to really, you know, take a lead and keep that lead and maybe kill it with D'Angelo Williams. So I think there's that probability too that they'll come out blazing. We've seen that from this offense. So there's that possibility, but I'm leaning more toward this being a D'Angelo Williams safe game for cash. So I'm all in on him, and I'm with you on the under for the most part.
And I'm, you know, D'Angelo Williams doesn't have opposite splits because he's been good at home too, but mm-hmm. he has big games on the road. He has three straight road games with 20 yep. points. So the three games that Ben has been terrible and Antonio Brown hasn't been that good. D. Will has 20 points in those games. He had 30 points last week, FanDuel points. So I think D'Angelo Williams is the play here, and Cleveland is. I mean, they're terrible against running backs. They're bad against the pass. They're getting worse because Tremont Williams has a concussion. He's probably not going to play. But, I mean, they've only given up the 13th most points to quarterbacks in the last five. It's not like they've been, you know, horrific, but they have been really bad against running backs, and I think that – that's going to be the way to attack them, like they tried to attack Baltimore last week. So it was an interesting thing. So I'm with you. I mean, Martavis Bryant has so much upside, and he's only 7,100. He'll probably find his way into one of my lineups. But yeah, I think D. Will is the play. Nice. The next game has a exact similar situation. New England at Miami. New England's 10-point road favorite. So I will be betting on Miami. 75% of the action is on New England. There are some 10.5s out there, so it's going to go that way. The total has fallen from 48.5. It's down to 47. I got it yesterday at 48. I bet the under and Miami. I parlayed it, so fingers crossed. Let's see how that goes. Miami, I mean, do you see any value on Miami side here?
I don't love it. I mean, I don't think the ceiling is very high. I think there's a lot of, you know, sort of distrust of Lamar Miller in this matchup. I think New England is really trying to focus on stopping the run. I mean, they've continually added more bodies to their interior defensive line. So I think I'm not really crazy high on him. I think Landry's ceiling is he's a crawl space guy. You know, his ceiling and his floor are really close together. You know, he's going to get targets. And I'd say that there's some like, GPP, you know, super deep GPP attraction to the Tannehill play because nobody will be on him in this matchup. They are at home, and there's potential for him to have one of those D-gaff type of games. But other than that, I mean, I'm really not on anybody. I'd say this is going to be a pretty basic, low-scoring game. And I'm with you. I mean, you mentioned the Pittsburgh-Cleveland game. I think this is kind of very similar. You know, I'm more on the running situation for New England for a couple of reasons. The good news is Sebastian Vollmer will be back for the playoffs. Bad news is he won't be back for this game. And we saw the Patriots now without Nate Solder and Sebastian Vollmer really were getting a lot of heat off the edge.
And I think potentially LaDarian Waddle or LaAdrian Waddle.
Yeah.
Like, is he's hurt too, right?
So yeah, I mean, they don't have enough depth at tackle right now. I mean, they'll be fine for the playoffs, but right now it's such a vulnerability that for me, in the passing game, there's just not a lot of time involved for Brady to throw the football. He has to have enough time to get rid of that football, and he's just under pressure constantly right now. So for me, I think that they lead a little bit more white. I think there's something to be said for maybe Steven Jackson getting more totes this week So he's maybe your deep contrarian play. But I'm keeping a very close eye on Julian Edelman. Now, without him in the mix, it's even worse because now they have no edge protection. There's no quick check down. Gronk is going to be called on to block a little bit more too as well. He did a little bit more last week as well. And that's never a good thing because when you take out that weapon, now you have really no reliable weapons outside of the running backs, outside of James White. So if Edelman practices late in the week, he's a green light to go for this game, then I'm a little bit more excited about New England, just a little bit, but not as much. I mean, if Vollmer was there and Edelman was healthy, then I'd be a lot more excited for New England. I think the ceiling would be a little bit higher, but I think this is kind of a game that I'm, you know, trying to avoid. I think people are talking up Gronk. I think that's, you know, at his price, I don't think you necessarily have to go up that high. We talked about somebody like Zach Ertz, you know, who's half the price on DraftKings. So, you know, there's no need for me this week. I think there's a lot more desirable roster construction without having to pay up for Gronk.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at what Gronk's been doing recently, it's not like, you know, it's not like he's setting the world on fire.
No, he's and I haven't looked, but I mean, there's guys like Reed that have blown him out of the water. Barnage has been more consistent week to week. I mean, it's just, you know, there's no need to pay up for Gronk.
Yeah, and at $8,100 on FanDuel, he has to have a really big game to return value.
Yeah, I don't know that that's gonna. I mean, it, in theory, it would in a perfect storm if everything was working out correctly.
If they had an offensive line, I would be all in on it.
Right now, yeah, if they were at full strength, I'd be like, okay, I'd be excited. And Edelman was in the mix too, because I think that when Edelman's in the mix too, it does create. Let's put it this way: when defenses now say, well, Edelman's getting targeted like a maniac and Brady's not afraid to keep checking down, then the defense sort of starts to play a little bit more shallow, and then they start to open up those things, those deep plays for Gronk on a one-on-one where Brady just says, okay, now I'm going to throw one deep to Gronk and lights out, it's over. You can't do that because you have to focus too much on protecting the edge for Brady, and Gronk has to be involved a little bit. And that's just, you know, it sets up for a really low scoring affair. Like you said, I'd take the under on this one as well. And probably more so on the running backs than anything else.
And I mean, just as a side note, Olivier Vernon could have a field day.
Like, yeah,
he could lose his mind, and he could have five sacks. Like, he could lose his mind. I don't think it's a great spot for the offense. I think that New England, because there's no way they're going to fear this offense. Yeah. I mean, they completely shut down Lamar Miller last time. They've no fear of this passing game. They're going to have no fear of this offense. This is going to be the type of game they want to get in and get out. And I think I agree with you about the running backs, but the problem is, how do you pick them? You mentioned Steven Jackson. I agree with you completely. If they're going to try to get him ready for the playoffs, then they have to start getting him more involved. He was already involved last week. Yeah, I think he had seven carries to nine for Bolden or something like that.
Right.
So you can't pick between him and Bolden who's going to get the carries. You mentioned James White. He gets all the red zone opportunities, but New England probably has to be losing in this game for him to get the catches that are going to help him to reach tournament value at $6,400 on FanDuel. And I don't think they're going to, I mean, I'll bet on Miami as a 10-point dog, but that's not because I think they're going to win the game. Because I think that it's going to be a 20-10 game. And so that's the situation you're in. I doubt I have much of this game at all. Maybe if Edelman plays, maybe I grab a piece of Edelman. If Lamar Miller plays, I mean, Lamar Miller, maybe I grab a piece of him just because he's only $6,500 and he's shown that upside a couple times this year and he can always make big plays. But I think that this is a situation that I'm going to mostly avoid.
Like I said too, Ray, with Jackson on DraftKings, he's really just a few shekels above minimum. And if we remember last year and years past with New England, they get to this part of the season, they love to run power either way.
LeGarrette Blunt time is what this is.
And so Steven Jackson's, you know, the next best thing. I mean, and he's, you know, if that's what they're going to commit to this game, and it's a good, very good matchup to do that, basically.
Absolutely. Yeah.
especially now that they've trended moving Sue outside as well, which is weird. But yeah, absolutely take advantage of those matchups. So I can see that happening, and that's why I have Jackson as a decent flex this week. I think you can plug him in there and look for that ownership. If he's almost, you know, under 1% owned, that's somebody I'm almost certainly going to have in GPP lineups.
All right, so let's get it. Stacks on stacks on stacks on stacks.
Stacks on stacks.
We already talked about one of mine, Eli and Odell Beckham. Mm. We've already kind of tangentially talked about one of my other ones, which is Brian Hoyer, DeAndre Hopkins, and Julius Thomas. So Houston's defense is good, but Blake Bortles put 3 touchdowns on him the last time these two met. The total in this game, I think, is a little bit low. I should have probably written that down. I don't have that on the top of my head. Total's 45. I think that total is a little bit low. I think that this is going to be a little more high scoring than that. And Brian Hoyer, he's only $6,900 at FanDuel. I think that's a ridiculously low price. I mean, this Jacksonville defense is as bad as the New Orleans defense. We saw that last week against New Orleans. They're going to try to defend DeAndre Hopkins with Devon House, who the last time they played, Hopkins literally sent House to the bench. They literally benched House after that game because of what Hopkins did to him. Hoyer had 293 yards and 3 touchdowns the last time they played. If you wanted to go a little more contrarian, you could put Nate Washington in there, who has 4 touchdowns in 3 games without Cecil Shorts this season. Cecil Shorts is going to be out. And then, like you said, you want to make those correlation plays. On the other side, if Houston's going to really put up points, well, someone else has got to do it too. And I think that it's going to be Julius Thomas, who went 7 for 78 and a touchdown in the first meeting. He's a little bit high priced on FanDuel, but I think that makes him a little bit more contrarian, especially since he was really bad in a great spot last week. So I think there's a lot of value in this game in both passing games, but especially on the Houston side. And I'll definitely have 2 or 3 of these guys in a couple lineups.
Yeah, I agree with you. And again, it's that recency bias. I think, you know, I'm sure you had a lot of Julius Thomas last week. I did.
Unfortunately, yes.
Yeah, and it's the recency bias burn, you know. Like, I think a lot of people will be off him. His ownership should be pretty low. I think he was, like, if I remember correctly, last week was about 10% owned. And I imagine that's probably going to be, like, half this week, if that. And his price has actually gone down a little bit. So, absolutely, it's a good matchup for him to exploit. And just like you said, we've been talking about all throughout the podcast, that correlation play. You want a slice of the pie on the opposite side. So I'm definitely into that. I mean, I'd be into, you know, a full-on Hoyer nuke Nate stack as well, like you were talking about. I think that's fine, too, if you wanted to go with that and Julius Thomas. It certainly allows you a lot of wiggle room to get some of those studs like Odell Beckham in your lineup, because Washington and Julius Thomas and Hoyer are all pretty, you know, low priced on average. So you can certainly get a lot of studs in your lineup and do that, stars and scrubs kind of roster construction for sure.
I also kind of like Stafford with maybe Calvin Johnson. I'm a little off on that. I'm going to have to put more thought into it.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely in tournaments with Eric Ebron. I think Stafford is cash worthy everywhere. I mean, like you said, you don't have to stack, or maybe even don't want to stack in cash, but I think Stafford's cash worthy. He dropped 405 yards and 4 touchdowns on Chicago last time. He's thrown 16 touchdowns to 2 interceptions since the bye week. He has at least 16.8 FanDuel points in every game since the bye. 4 of his 7 since the bye have been over 20 points. I think he is a very easy cash play at 7,700. I have no worries about that against Chicago. You know, Megatron, he's been good against Chicago the last 2 years. He had 166 yards and a touchdown against them with Tracy Porter in shadow coverage in week 6, and it looks like Porter is going to do the same thing this week. Tracy Porter's 5'11", Megatron 6'5". You can see the problem there. So there's some Megatron. He is probably going to be higher owned than he should be, because of what happened last week. He got back in the end zone. He had a pretty good game. People might come back on him. But, you know, if you don't want to go that route, if you want to go a little more contrarian and you want to match some with Stafford, I think Eric Ebron at 4,800 on FanDuel is a potentially cash play. He's 5 targets a game. He's pretty much locked into that. He makes big plays. He's involved in the red zone. He has a red zone target in each of the last two games. At only 4,800, you don't need a huge game for him to really meet value. And I think that Eric Ebron, even in cash, in a kind of a bad week for tight ends, I think that he's a consideration, especially if you want to go with those three wide receivers we talked about, you know, early in the podcast. So he's an interesting guy too, I think.
I love it, man. I love it. We've talked about some of my stacks. We've already talked about Eli, Odell Beckham, certainly, you know, Sam Bradford, Zach Ertz, I love a lot this week as well. The correlation stack of Breeze, Julio, and Devonta Freeman. Here's one that I really like, Ray, and this is going to hurt your heart a little bit, but Frank Gore and the Colts D this week.
I'm all in on the Colts D.
Well, let me tell you why I like the stack. I think that, and I hate to be a conspiracy theorist, but the Browns right now and the Titans are fighting for that number one pick.
Fighting is a strong term.
I know it's a strong term. They're sucking for that first pick. And, you know, listen, when teams start to show that they're sort of wrapping it up, you know, they're pulling up the tent stakes. You know, the carnival's leaving town. The guys with the ponytails that work the tilt-a-whirl, you know, they're putting out their last cigarette. You know what I'm talking about. I think that, you know, the Colts and the Colts D and Gore, their defense has been really good as far as the fantasy defense the last couple of weeks. They've actually been quite good. And I think that, you know, it's a good setup for a low-scoring game for Gore to be fed a little bit in this game because, you know, they're – quarterback choices are dwindling.
Their quarterback choices are Ryan Lindley and Josh Freeman.
Yeah, it's horrible. So, I mean, he's going to have to – I mean, he's been pretty much averaging about 15 totes. And I think that could go up this week. So his price right now on DraftKings is like $4,000. I'm all in with the Colts D. I think it could certainly go that correlation stack. And – you know, again, in the low scoring affair, certainly a good situation for him to kind of kill it with the rock. So, I mean, it's not a sexy stack, but I like it, man.
I don't know if I can go the Frank Gore route, but I completely agree with you about Indianapolis's defense. I mean,
absolutely.
The Titans quit. Like they've been done with this season for a long time.
They are the Roberto Duran of NFL teams. No, yeah, mas, baby. No mas.
They are about as done as you can get. And so I completely agree with you about them. I mean, it's been painful to watch their games the last 3 weeks. I can tell you that. Any other stacks you like?
No, that's it for me, man. What else you got?
So some contrarian plays. I've talked about my big one in DeMarco Murray. I think we kind of agree about Rashad Jennings, who might not be as high owned. Maybe some other guys we haven't talked about. I guess my favorite is Eddie Lacy, mm-hmm. who has been, you know, he's been an enigma the last 5 weeks. He has two 20-point games over that span, but he has like two with less than five. He's been so hit or miss, so up and down. But James Starks was benched last week for fumbling, completely benched, like playing behind John Crockett benched. Eddie Lacy has 9 red zone touches in his last 4 games. He had 12 carries last week despite the blowout. He had 20 carries, I believe, or 22, something like that, for 100 yards against Minnesota last time. He's only 5,900 on FanDuel. They're home favorites. It's in December where Eddie Lacy loves to play. I think that this is a great tournament spot for Eddie Lacy, and I don't think he's going to be particularly high owned. And again, at 5,900, you can fit a lot of wide receivers into that lineup. So I love Eddie Lacy this week. I'll have quite a few shares of him in my tournament lineups for sure.
I like that, man. I talked about this one already. Steven Jackson, again, just barely above minimum on DraftKings. Probably relatively cheap as well on FanDuel, I imagine.
Yeah, he's 5,300. Yeah,
and somebody that potentially in this matchup could score, you know, a goal line TD very easily and return his money. Just barely over 3,000 on DraftKings. I like him a lot this week. Another guy I like, Marvin Jones, this week. Hopefully, AJ McCarron plays. He's pretty fearless about getting the ball downfield. He's pretty much that's all he does is chuck it. And Marvin Jones is certainly somebody that could benefit in this matchup. I think obviously a lot of people will be on AJ Green. Very few will be on Jones. He's 3.7K right now on DraftKings. They'll be at home. They're playing for something in this matchup. A little bit different. I think Baltimore will be a little bit pumped up after last week, what they did to Pittsburgh. So I think they'll be definitely could be exploitable this week. So I do like Marvin Jones. And to get to the defenses, because I know everybody asked about this, we already touched on Indianapolis. I definitely love them against Tennessee. They're very cheap. There's a lot of really good cheap defenses. Probably the most expensive it would be Atlanta at home versus New Orleans. And just their pass rush is starting to dial it up. As we talk about on this podcast a lot, Ray, it's not about the points scored. It's about getting the quarterback, you know, sacks, turnovers. Atlanta can certainly do that at home and finish on a strong note. I think that's certainly possible. Dallas defense. I mean, Washington is probably going to sit most of their key guys this week. And Dallas at home in a game that Washington really doesn't need to do anything. Dallas probably want to come out and get one of those quote-unquote moral victories in this matchup and be able to kind of get after them on defense. So I do like Dallas, another defense that's really cheaply priced on DraftKings. And you can take either side of the Vikings-Green Bay matchup, honestly. They're both pretty cheap this week, and I think that I could argue for either one. I think that, you know, if you're in a matchup on a head-to-head with somebody and you just so happen, you know, you see that they have the Green Bay defense, you could flip it over to the Vikings defense because they're pretty close in price. And I think they're probably both pretty good matchups this week. I think it's potentially a low-scoring game. You had talked about Eddie Lacy. I think this is a game where they're going to want to run the football on both sides. Neither offense is particularly you know, scary in terms of passing right now. So I think this is a team, both teams are pretty one-dimensional. And you know, that makes sort of the defense puts them in pretty good position to score some points, get after the quarterbacks. Both defenses right now, both offensive lines aren't really that great. We could see some points on defense for both.
Yeah, and like I said, I took the under on that game early this week on Tuesday. So I guess yesterday when we're recording. And it dropped from 48 when I took it all the way down to 45.5. So, you know, the people are betting heavy on an under here. So that's something definitely to consider. My last guy is a guy that has been a huge bust this year that everybody is so upset that they drafted him in the first round and redraft, this guy included. And that is Mr. CJ Anderson.
I knew that was coming.
I mean, he's 5,500 on FanDuel. As it gets colder, he seems to get better, it seems. He had 6 yards of carry against San Diego last time. He just didn't get much work. You know, he kind of broke out last week. If his back's okay, he played through the injury, but we've seen that. You know, if his back's okay and he's actually going to play this week, San Diego, you know, playing out the string, they on the road in Denver. I think that if you match CJ Anderson with the Denver defense, you would be in a pretty good spot. So I'm liking him a little bit in tournaments as well.
Nice. I like it. Hey, Ray, before we wrap things up, man, we got a couple of questions. You know, this is obviously our last podcast. So a couple of our followers on Twitter asked a few questions, and we want to get to them to kind of see where we're going from here. The first one would be from, by the way, I love when people use their business tag because it's obviously free advertising on our podcast. So at AP_plumbing1195.
Best plumbing service in the U.S., AP plumbing.
There you go. Biggest surprise listener to our podcast. Anybody that you know of that sort of surprised you that listened to our podcast?
I don't know if they listen to this podcast, but recently I was followed on Twitter by Rob Lowe's brother.
Oh, okay. Chad Lowe?
Chad Lowe, yeah.
He's a big fantasy. Yeah, he's a big fantasy geek.
So maybe he listens to the podcast. I don't know. Maybe that's why he followed me on Twitter. I texted my friends and I said, I am literally one step away from Chris Traeger following me on Twitter. It was a big day for me.
That's nice. I like that. I that trumps anything I could say. But no, I mean, for me, it's always cool when people that are bigger DFS names, you know, than us, obviously, listen to us or DM me and let us know that, you know, that they are listeners and fans of the podcast. I've seen a lot of that lately. I've got a lot of DMs from people that are sort of sorry to see us go, and they are, you know, admitted fans of the podcast, which always makes you feel good, because I think good DFS players listen to everybody, and they try to listen to every, you know, detail of information, because we gain something. You know, you and I listen to other podcasts, we listen to other people in the industry tweet out things on Twitter, and we disseminate that information. Hopefully that helps us win each week. So that's the important part. I mean, I think to me, I always feel good when somebody else that I know that is really good at this and they're really profitable, and maybe they make their living at this, DMs me and says, "Hey, great podcast. I really like that, you know, blah, blah, blah," without naming any specifically. But I always find that really cool. And that probably means more to me than just some random, you know, celebrity doing it. But I definitely like the Chad Lowe thing. That's dope, man.
I really, if you're listening now, just let us know, Chad Lowe.
I think he played a sad dude on Life Goes On, which was
he is definitely an actor. I have seen him in movies for sure.
Yes, so. he's underrated handsome, because obviously Rob Lowe's super handsome, but he's Chad Lowe's underrated handsome. Totally.
Yeah. Oh no, it's not like a Howard brother situation. No.
No.
They are both good looking individuals.
Yes, exactly. And that, by the way, he's talking about Ron Howard and his brother, who are hideous, by the way.
I hope that what's Ron Howard's brother? I forget his name.
Clint Howard.
Yeah, I hope Clint Howard does list this. I love you. I think you're a great actor.
I love you, Clint. Yes, you're great. You're great. He was, I think he played like a creature in Lost in Space a long time ago.
I don't know. Actually, I can add another one to this. I don't know if Josh Saviano, who played Paul on The Wonder Years, I don't know if he listens to the podcast, but we have been Twitter friends for quite a long time, and I played in a few leagues with him. So nice. Does he count?
Yes, yes. Josh Saviano.
I hope you listen, Josh.
Paul Pfeiffer, man, from
Paul
The Wonder
Pfeiffer
Years.
From The Wonder Years, yeah. I'm still trying to get him to hook me up with Winnie. Hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, she's still quite a looker, man. Actually, she looks even better now.
Oh, absolutely.
I saw her on full admission, my wife and I, around this time of year, she loves to watch like those Lifetime Christmas movies. And she
watch those Lifetime Christmas movies.
Listen, man, I'm a good husband. I watch along with her while I'm typing away on my iPad doing other stuff. But definitely check them out. But she was on one of those movies and she looked good. That's all I got to say. And let's see. The last question would be from Jeff Becker, who's at Beff Jecker. He's a silly man. He said, "Will either one of you guys be doing any podcasting next year?" I'll ask you, Ray, first.
I don't know. I really don't. I think I probably will be. I like podcasting quite a bit. I think it's something that I've really started to enjoy doing. And this year, you know, this is really my first foyer in a while. I did a podcast a long time ago, but this half decade ago. And so it's my first kind of foyer into it and quite some time. And so I have liked it, and I hope to have a podcast next year, or be involved at least in a podcast next year. If I'm not the host every week, at least be involved in it. So hopefully yes, you know, and I'll definitely keep everybody updated on that via the old Twitter account. If you're interested, how about you?
Yeah. I will obviously not be doing a weekly one. At least I don't think I will be. You and I agreed that this was a one, you know, year deal, one season type deal. So I'm a man of my word. So if I do any, it'll probably be just guest appearances here and there when people ask me, and sometimes people do. And I, you know, I try to accommodate as many people as I can. There is some talk. I will say this. There is some talk that that there might be something for draft day consulting. You guys know about draft day consulting, Denny Carter's website. I take part in that and have done some consulting recently. We're thinking about maybe doing some stuff like that for people that subscribe to the service. Maybe doing sort of a, you know, a podcast that if you log in and if you're a subscriber, you could listen to the podcast. So not necessarily something that's out there for the masses, but for subscribers specifically to answer their questions. So that might be something that we do in the future. I don't know if that's something in cement yet, but So there's potential there for me to be doing something, but I will definitely be on other people's podcasts here and there. I know some folks, some buddies over in Australia and in England have been asking me to do some for a while, and I will definitely get to them in the off season. So you'll be hearing me making fun of other people's accents probably on some other podcasts. So definitely at some point, but for the off season, I'll be just chilling out and looking at some dynasty stuff. So
yeah, and I'm going to be trying to figure out DFS basketball, which should be
nice. Yeah,
which should be a money maker.
I know. I'm going to try to as well. I think. I mean. It's funny because I think there's a Jones that you have when fantasy football is over, you know, like you really kind of, you know, the NFL season is over. Obviously there's that gap before the draft, and you know, we kind of miss it. So for me with DFS, it's like, I'm so into DFS NFL that I definitely want to get into something else. So I've dabbled a little bit in some UFC. And some really good, smart people that I know that they're into UFC, DFS, of kind of getting into that a little bit. And there's actually an event coming up soon. So I'm definitely going to be checking that out. And yeah, I mean, that's, for me, it's about getting better at DFS anyway. I mean, this is what this podcast was about, was us, along with our listeners, getting better every week. And I think we have.
Just don't do baseball, because baseball is terrible.
Oh, God, no. Yeah. Yeah,
it's the absolute worst. I hate DFS baseball. You pay that much money for Bryce Harper and he goes 0-for-4, and I just want to break something. I can't. It's so awful.
I think a hat tip to our buddy John Bales, who's written just about every book on every DFS topic there is imaginable, and it's been a big DFS player for a while now. He said, you're better off not watching and paying attention to baseball if you play DFS baseball.
It's so terrible.
Because it's just so volatile. It's like, you know, if you put too much effort into it, you're probably going to get burned anyway. So what's the point? But I will just say this in closing. We're not going to do the usual close. I just want to say, for me, it's been a pleasure. I mean, this was something that, you know, Ray and I decided to do after the Two Mugs podcast had come to a close. And, that, you know, I wanted to do a DFS-focused podcast. You know, that was my goal, because that's where I was leaning, because our old Two Mugs podcast was starting to lean heavily toward DFS, and Ray was right there saying, you know, let's do it. Let's get it going. I mean, it was like instant chemistry from day one. People responded to it. They liked it a lot. I mean, I've gotten nothing but positive praise from people, except for that one guy that left the review that said you were pompous. I don't know why.
To be fair, I am pompous. I don't know if that's a negative criticism.
But I mean, how dare he, even though you are pompous.
I mean, that's my high horse you hear in the background. I mean, exactly. I'm a pompous individual. And you know what? It's probably because I'm better than you. So, you know, what are you going to do?
But, you know, for me, it's been a lot of fun. I'll full disclosure, Ray does all the work on this podcast. I come on like a bozo last minute and throw stuff together and try to not sound like an idiot. And he's the one that does all the construction of this podcast, puts everything together, tapes it, edits it. It's been a blast for me, because I love talking football. It doesn't matter to me, you know, how we're talking. I mean, I just think that it's been a ton of fun for me. Ray's a good guy, knows a lot more than I do about this stuff. And, you know, I've learned a lot from him, and, you know, hopefully you've learned something from both of us.
Yeah. I've had a great time. I've really enjoyed doing it. Like I said, it's rekindled my interest in podcasting. I hadn't done it for a long time. It's something I've really come to love. And I don't think I'd be surprised if this is the last podcast we appear on together. I would be shocked by that. I mean, I imagine draft season's going to come around, and, you know, maybe we'll talk a little bit about a few draft prospects and tape it. Maybe that'll happen.
I think, yeah. Hey, who knows? I mean, like, sometimes you have those, like, you know, those crossover shows, those like Different Strokes and, you know, The Facts of Life. You know, they have those specials.
Yeah,
the Globetrotters on Gilligan's Island. We might have
rest
something
in peace,
like
Meadowlark, by the way.
There you go. We might have something like that, absolutely, in the off season, just to kind of let people know we're still kicking around And, you know, Ray's going to be doing his thing at Roto-World. Again, I'll be at you know, Draft Day Consultants and having some fun there doing some Dynasty stuff. So we'll still be on the Twitter machine, you know, and doing our thing. So you won't miss us that much. We'll still be obnoxious on social media. So
that's the only way we know how to be.
Exactly. All right.
So that's it for me. For Rummy, for me, really appreciate you guys listening to us. You know, hit us up on Twitter if you have any questions. You know, or if you just want to tell us, you know, how terrible we are, we're fine with that as well. And I guess until next time, we'll see you.
We'll see you guys.